Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our webinar this morning on using the PLACE method to inform decision making. To remind everybody, the PLACE method stands for the Priorities for Local AIDS Control Efforts. So my name is Tara, and I work on the Measure Evaluation Project. I am the Senior Technical Specialist for Data, Demand, and Use. And I will be joined by two colleagues this morning who I will introduce in just a minute. Before we get into the webinar, I just want to remind those of you that aren't familiar with measure evaluation that we are the USAID Global Health Bureau's primary vehicle for supporting improvements in monitoring and evaluation in population health and nutrition programs worldwide. Specifically, we help to identify data needs, collect and analyze data, and use those data in decision making. Here we are in the webinar, and sometimes people have challenges staying connected to webinars. So to remind you, if you lose connectivity or if you're having problems with your audio, you can always close out of the webinar and re-enter the meeting room by clicking on the webinar link that we provided in our emails. Also, in terms of having trouble with audio, you can also run the audio setup wizard, which is, if you look at your top icon bar, it's under meeting at the top of the screen to see if your speakers are working. And if both of those two things fail, you can always send an email to glbatar@unc.edu. She's here with us, and she can try to help you get back working. Also, a couple of tips for participating in the discussion. You also, at the top icon bar in the gray black up there, you'll see some icons to comment. You can raise your hand by clicking on the little person with the hand raised icon. Also, if you want to ask a question, you can either speak into the microphone, and first be sure it is enabled by clicking on the microphone icon at the top of the screen. Or you can type your questions in the Q&A window located at the top of your screen as well. And also, to remind everyone, we are recording this webinar. So if for some reason you're having a hard time hearing or get bumped off, the recording will be made available soon. We'll let you know when that is at the website indicated below measure evaluation. So first I'll be introducing the presenters, and then we'll just quickly talk about kind of why we're talking about PLACE today as a data-informed decision-making tool. We'll have an overview of PLACE, and then we'll talk about an application of PLACE in Jamaica. We'll have some questions and answers, and hopefully wrap up within an hour. Oh, let me first introduce our presenters. We are here with Dr. Sharon Weir. She's a senior epidemiologist with Measure Evaluation, and kind of one of the fathers of the mothers of the PLACE method. Also, we will hopefully have Professor Peter Figueroa, who is at the University of the West Indies, who has worked with the PLACE method and with Sharon for and others for a very long time. And we hope to get him on the line as well to talk about the experience in Jamaica. So before we start, I'd just like to touch on why we're here this morning discussing the PLACE method. As I mentioned earlier, one of the primary objectives of measure evaluation is to improve the use of data in decision making. And we are all aware of the challenges involved in providing quality health services in the context where we work. In many countries, health programs are facing a high disease burden, a growing population, inadequate numbers, and poor distribution of qualified health workers to provide those services, and often less than fully functioning health systems to actually support the delivery of services. So it's in this situation that it becomes extremely important that we make the best use of the resources available to us. In many contexts, funding for health programs is either decreasing or stagnating. So it's really important at this specific moment that we target our programmatic strategies, policies, and interventions to the key populations that need them the most. And this is most even more important in terms of the HIV epidemic, this concept of targeting where we place our services. So that's why we're here today. And I will quickly bring in this quote here from a colleague that we worked with in Nigeria. He was a national level policymaker, and he kind of summed it all up very nicely. He said that without information, things are done arbitrarily, and one becomes unsure of whether a policy or program will fail or succeed. If we allow our policies and programs to be guided by empirical facts and data, there'll be a noticeable change in the impact of what we do. So let's move on to the actual presentation this morning, and Sharon will start.
Hello, everyone. I'm so honored to be here with you today, and I'm very happy that so many people are interested in this PLACE method. I wanted to run through some of the basics of the PLACE method, and then hopefully Peter Figueroa will join us to talk more about the experiences we've had in Jamaica. Okay, so now the next. There we go. Sorry about that. This is just a map showing where PLACE has been implemented to date that we know of. And it's interesting because I'm always hearing about other countries and places where PLACE has been implemented on their own. And I think some of you are from some of these places, and we invite your participation as we discuss. This is a new book that's come out recently by Mead Over, and I just added this to our presentation because he's highlighted in this book a recommendation for using PLACE to estimate the size and location of key populations in countries. It's a great book. Now, getting to a description of the PLACE method, the problem that's addressed by the method is the need to prevent HIV transmission at the local level. And the aim is really to obtain rapidly available information in the local setting to target and monitor HIV prevention. Now, this is a lot of words on the slide, but I wanted to give you a sense of the rationale for PLACE in terms of the epidemiology of HIV transmission. We all know that HIV, the pandemic, is worldwide, but of course transmission occurs locally in local epidemics. In order to strategically focus our efforts and resources, I believe that prevention should focus in geographic areas where HIV incidence is highest. Because no two local epidemics, however, are the same, each one reflects a unique underlying pattern of new and concurrent sexual and possibly in some areas needle-sharing partnerships. National-level data often hides these local epidemics. We don't see them in national or aggregate and estimates and surveillance data. So that's why there's a need to look locally for evidence to guide our programming. So in the absence, though, of surveillance data that covers the unique differences in local epidemics, I found that people at the national level calling on people from the regions and from the districts can meet together and review the available information to identify areas in the country where HIV incidence is high. Now there's PMTCT data available locally, and we can use whatever information we have from the DHS, from PMTC data, from routine data, and from our surveys of most at-risk populations to identify in a country where HIV incidence is high. So after we find these areas, taking prevention to the areas should focus on finding people who have the highest rates of new sexual or needle sharing contacts in those areas, and then bringing to them combination prevention or whatever the national package is to reduce the partnership rates, increase testing, treatment, referral, and counseling for HIV and condom use. So what the PLACE method does is help countries identify those pockets of high incidence, and then within those areas, identify venues and events where local prevention programs can reach the most important sexual and injecting drug use networks. That's just a bit on the rationale for PLACE. In practical terms, though, the protocol has five steps. Like I was just saying, we use available data in the first step to identify the areas most likely to have high incidence of HIV infection using all available sources of data and local insights and expert knowledge. Then within each of those areas, it could be 10% of the districts in the country, it could be some of the large urban areas in a country. Whatever those areas are, we conduct a rapid assessment in each one. And that assessment has really three parts. In the first part, we identify venues where people meet new sexual partners. And then we visit those venues, characterize them, and map them. Then in the next step, we go back to a sample of venues and assess the risk behavior and estimate the prevalence of HIV infection and other STI through interviews and testing of venue patrons and the people who work at the venues. Then this information is synthesized to help the local district or area pull together an action plan to address any gaps they find in prevention services for those most at-risk populations or key populations. So after these areas are identified within these high incidence areas, or we sometimes call them priority prevention areas or high transmission areas, within these areas, the first step of the rapid assessment is to ask community informants, where do people meet new sexual partners? And we do this because we want to find public places where people with the highest rates of new partnerships and injection drug use can be reached with prevention programs. So we ask people, where do people meet new partners? And we say, where do young people meet older people? Where do commercial sex workers solicit clients? Where do mobile and resident populations go to meet new sex partners? So we don't constrain the question to specific key populations, but we cast a wide net. And we ask community informants to name these venues until no new venues are found. At the end of this, you get a list of the venues and events with the number of times they're reported. In the next step, we visit and characterize and map these venues, and an interview is conducted with a knowledgeable person on site to obtain characteristics of the place. And these places can be bars, parks, streets, festivals, wherever people go to meet new sexual partners. And the mapping, we've done mapping by hand onto aerial photos, or now more commonly using GPS. When we go to visit a place and map it, we're trying to find out the extent to which there's been already HIV outreach prevention programs at the venue. So we want to know, are there condoms there? Are there AIDS prevention services there? We also want to know when people are most likely to be there. What are the busiest times for the venue? How many staff are there? How stable is the venue? What type of the venue? We also asked this one person that we're interviewing at the venue during this site visit to describe the types of people coming to the venues. How many men come there compared to women? What are the types of regular patrons that come there? And we asked, is commercial sex at this venue? Do men who have sex with men come here? Are there youth people here, unemployed people? And then we confirmed that, in fact, people do meet new sexual partners at the venue. I'm sort of running through this protocol, but we're up now to step four. And just to recap, what we've done so far in the protocol is identify these areas that have high incidence. In the next step, we went to those areas and found where people meet new sexual partners. Then we went to those places and mapped them and got some characteristics of them. And now that we have the sampling frame of venues, we take a sample of the venues and go to these places, you know, late at night, weekends, whenever they're busy, and interview and test people at these events. So when we go there, we're interviewing and testing the workers at the place and also the visitors who are coming to the place. And we have a short questionnaire that covers some of the key indicators that you all are familiar with, and ask them about some of their behaviors and access to programs. And we test for HIV and other STI. Then at the end of that bit of data collection, we work with the districts, the local groups, to develop action plans so that they can respond to the behaviors that are revealed and to the lack of prevention services that may show up. And on this slide, you can see this map. This is from a township in Cape Town where we use the information to map where are the sites where condoms are available and the sites where condoms are not available. And over the years, we've developed a pretty good working relationship with PSI, for example, to use our maps to help make sure that condom delivery goes to the key places. Now that's the summary, the overview of the method. And now I think Peter Figueroa is with us, and he may want to comment on the history of place in Jamaica, and we have a few slides on this topic.
Hi. It's good to join on this webinar. This is Peter Hauser. Unfortunately, I won't be out on the phone,
Yes, that's right. And I think people can hear you.
Okay. Well, this operation has been very fruitful, and we first did a place study in Montego Bay, which is the tourism capital of Jamaica, and this was in 2002. We had an excellent experience there. We'll say more about that. And following that, we rolled it out to Negril. And then we carried the place methodology to Kingston. And we decided to do a randomized control trial using the place method in Kingston. Following that, we adapted the place methodology, simplified it, and rolled it out island-wide, invited colleagues from the Caribbean to see what we were doing, and then more recently we did place surveys island-wide in 2008 and 2012. And just to summarize, that places had a tremendous impact in Jamaica. It has helped us improve the surveillance of persons most at risk. We were able to identify that both staff venues where people go to meet new sex partners are at high risk of HIV and other sexually transmitted infections. And it really brought out, because we did testing for other STIs, we were surprised at the high rate of other sexually transmitted infections among persons working and visiting these sites. And we're not talking only about commercial sex workers. It helped us to improve our interventions because the PLACE method took us to sites which we had not anticipated would have so many persons at high risk of HIV and other STIs. So we were able to develop the scope and expand the scope of where we did our outreach work, and it was a revelation for our outreach staff who thought that they knew where all the action was in a particular area, that they themselves, through the PLACE method, would learn of new sites that they were not familiar with, but which they needed to reach with their intervention activity. So it gave us a lot more data to work with. We were able really to target those who were most in need, and it brought persons who we did not anticipate to be at such high risk, it brought those into our network of interventions. And really, it was through the PLACE methodology that we were able to bring down the HIV prevalence among sex workers from, when the slide says from 9%, but it was actually higher than that, and it's now down to just over 4%. You'll see a map of Sexual Network sites in St. James, and when we first did this, it was a real revelation. We knew of the nightclubs, the massage parlors, the go-go clubs, but when we used the PLACE methodology, people told us that we need to go to the restaurants, the malls, the cemetery, the churches, many street sites, the taxi stand, and as you can see, all these sites are mapped there. And then once they were mapped, we could choose a sample of the most high-risk sites, where we went to most of those, and we also took a random sample of all sites. We did have to adapt the method to Jamaica's needs. And this including the survey instruments that we used, as well as the action method. And we tried to simplify it. And even now, we're trying to ensure that the method is sufficiently adaptable and simple so that the persons in the field can use it, manage it, and own it. But it has helped us to reach many more persons, of course, who are testing positive, and we've enrolled them in treatment. And all persons testing positive for other STIs, we've also made arrangements for treating them. You can see that the tests that we did for HIV and other STIs, and we used the GenProbe method, which is very sensitive, and it's a very good method in the fact that you can just collect urine in the field or vaginal swabs. And many of the women were quite willing to go into the bathroom in places at clubs and just do a vaginal swab or collect urine. And even on the street sites, we were able to collect urine without too much difficulty. So if you look at the slide showing the prevention indicators for female sex workers, you will see that 91% of them in 2011 reported using a condom at last sex with a client. What we have observed through our work using this method is that many of the sex workers are less likely and HIV was only 38% using the 5-question indicator. But if you omitted the option of one faithful partner, then you notice it goes up to 52% because the sex workers really did not see that as a meaningful option. And I think the myths are what caused this indicator to be lower than what you would expect. And you could see that 92% of the sex workers reported being reached with the prevention program, and 75% reported being HIV tested in the past 12 months and getting their results. We still have a lot of future needs because we're trying to institutionalize the PLACE method and consolidate our outreach intervention approaches. And unfortunately, with the Global Fund coming to an end, the Global Fund project coming to an end soon, we have to see how best the government can take on the outreach workers. And in fact, there is a challenge where we may not be able to take on all the outreach workers, and this would be a serious blow to our prevention program. Of course, we've published some of the work. We still have to publish much more of what we have done. We have brought out the problem of the other sexually transmitted infections, but to be quite honest, we have not addressed these adequately. And we need to strengthen considerably the STI prevention program among those most at risk, including inner-city youth. And we'd love to maintain the STI testing capacity using GenPro, but it is a relatively expensive test given our resources. So there are lots of future needs that we need to address, and we are looking at how best to do this. But the PLACE method has really made a significant difference with respect to our outreach intervention work. And I'm going to pass back to Sharon to round up this presentation.
Great. Thank you so much, Peter, for that reflection and summary on PLACE in Jamaica. I think now we're moving to a question and answer time, so I know people are probably dying to ask questions. And so I think I'll turn it back to Tara now to help us sort out how to do this logistically.
Great. Thanks, Sharon. So if you have questions or comments, feel free to type them into the Q&A box that you see now on your screen, or you can also raise your hand and we'll take those questions. So while people are contemplating what they might want to ask, I would just like to comment, you know, that one of the reasons why we highlighted the PLACE methodology today as a methodology that really engenders the use of the information is because, you know, as you noted from listening to both Sharon and Peter, that PLACE really allows you to hone in on some very specific information needs. And the more specific you are about what you want to know, the more likely you are to be able to use that information in decision-making processes. Also, you'll note that it's a methodology that is very collaborative. When we talk about data use and we talk about improving or facilitating data use, one of the other things we stress is bringing not just those data producers, the researchers, the data collectors, the M&E specialists, into kind of the data use process, but also the ultimate end user of that information. So it's really bringing the data producers and the data users together and involving them in that research process. And from both what Sharon and Peter said, it's really obvious that this methodology facilitates that. First by looking at available information, then by doing a first round of interviews to construct your sampling frame, and then even, you know, in the interviewing process when you're going to the different venues and mapping the venues, that's also still very interactive among the data users and data producers. So I just wanted to highlight that as why we're talking about the PLACE methodology today. So I see we have a few questions here. So the first one here we have is, does this methodology include population size estimation, for example, respondent-driven sampling? And I think Sharon will respond to that question.
Hi, thank you for this question. Can people see on the right the online resources where it says place mapping and size estimation module? That's a resource that you can download. And so the quick answer to that question is yes, PLACE allows for size estimation. And the way that it does it is if we have a sampling frame, a list of venues, and we know the number of people at the venue, and we know the percentage of them that are in the category that you're trying to estimate the size for example, how many of them are sex workers or whatever, then you can multiply up to get an estimate of size. And there's more detail, obviously, in the size estimation module. PLACE is not, it's more of a venue-based sampling method than a respondent-driven sampling approach. Respondent-driven sampling has peer recruitment that is generally not venue-based. So, also on the Measure website, you can probably see a paper that we published comparing respondent-driven sampling to the PLACE method.
Thanks, Sharon. Okay, we have another question.
Thanks, Sharon. We have a second question here, which is, while accuracy could be a risk, is there any option for self-reporting via SMS text to broaden the data points? And Sharon will take that question.
I'll take part of this question, and then maybe Peter can chime in. We worry a lot about the validity of self-reported behavioral data. So especially in Jamaica and now elsewhere also, we've included in the PLACE protocol an option where the interviewer asks the most sensitive questions to the respondent, but the respondent has an answer sheet that is private, that the interviewer can't see what the respondent is answering. So the respondent is answering yes or no, or the number of partner type questions, especially about condom use and number of partners and anal sex and unprotected anal sex. Those kind of questions go on the self-reported answer sheet, which is then folded by the respondent and put into an envelope so to try to increase the privacy of responding to those questions. We haven't done the SMS text option yet. We have in China used ACASI approaches for responding. But mostly we've used a paper approach. But I think maybe Peter can comment as well on the importance of establishing a interview setting where the respondent can answer privately.
Thanks, Sharon. I was going to emphasize the importance of the selection of the interviewer. We have used the technique that Sharon described in virtually all our surveys in recent times. And persons appear to be reasonably comfortable in answering sensitive questions, but it does depend also on ensuring that the interview is being done privately and that the interviewer feels comfortable with the person who is interviewing them. And we have done this also with MSM, and we have used, you know, experienced female interviewers with the MSM. And the recent survey that we have done threw up very sensitive information where persons reported that they had been raped, jailed, that they had suffered violence, that they had been homeless. So it appears as if those criteria are met, that you can get good information.
Great. Thank you both, Sharon and Peter. On to the next question. What's the length of time that place usually takes, and what's the average cost, I'm assuming, of a place study? Sharon?
This is the question we often get here. And I honestly don't want to lie to you, but it is hard to answer, honestly. I think, in general, the part that takes the longest is the getting organized, is to setting up the initial stakeholder meeting in a country to identify the areas where a place is going to be implemented. Once all that preliminary planning is done, and that part can, I mean, through ethical review and protocol finalizing, that it can take a month to do that, but it's more likely to take a few months to do that. The fieldwork itself, it kind of depends on the scope of place, what the stakeholders decide is the right scope for place. But in general, if you want to interview 300 to 500 community informants, if you have a team of 12 interviewers or so, you should leave about a week to do that. If you want to visit 300 or 400 venues in the area and conduct the mapping and an interview, you should leave 10 days to 2 weeks for that. And then when you go back to interview the patrons and the workers at the place, that's where your sample size calculations become critical in terms of how long it's going to take. But generally, we want to leave 3 weeks to 4 weeks to do those interviews. So I think the speediest that it was ever done was probably in Ghana, a couple weeks per district, but it can also take longer. Now, in terms of cost, the cost depends on what tests you're going to use. If in Jamaica it was more expensive because the costs were about $30 per person, minimally. I think we're just now planning to do place in 25 districts in Uganda, and I'm forgetting the exact figure for the cost per district, but I think it's about $10,000 to $15,000 per district. And that's just with HIV testing and no other test.
Sharon?
Yeah.
Here, if I could add from the local perspective, I must admit that it always felt to me, being based in Jamaica, that it took longer than that in terms of preparation and then follow through. So I would just add a caution that if you're going to do it properly and try and take ownership of it and try and get your field staff to understand the importance and to understand the approach being taken and to internalize it, it really does require a good degree of investment of time and energy as well.
Yeah, that is, that's true. That's totally true. And I think, you know, I'm just back from Uganda, so that's where my mind is right at this moment. And I think there we had the first discussions probably last summer in July, and we're still right in the midst of protocol development now. And what Peter is saying is actually true. If you come in as an outsider and try to implement it quickly and leave, that's one sort of process. But if you really do want to engage people locally and create ownership locally and really have the method operate the way it should work, then this investment of, you know, the discussions and understanding and applying, seeing where the method actually fits into the country system is so critical. So I agree completely with Peter.
Great, thanks. Peter, thanks for bringing that up. When we talk about facilitating data use kind of from a broad perspective, we frequently focus on building ownership of the data collection effort locally as one of the primary drivers of ultimate use of the data. So thanks for bringing that up. Okay, our next question here is, I've read PLACE reports where we did not develop the testing section. Is this correct?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. Especially initially, we did not include testing because we really wanted to focus on assessing coverage for key populations and these people at the venues. But with, you know, the HIV rapid tests and now the syphilis rapid tests being so easy to use, it made sense to add testing to the protocol. And I think initially we wondered about the acceptability of HIV rapid testing in some of these venues. And maybe Peter can speak to this too, about the evolution over time of the acceptability of testing in these settings.
Well, initially, but we're talking about several years ago when we first started, we did wonder how readily persons would accept an HIV test at these public venues, these public sites. I think that we were pleasantly surprised how readily persons welcomed the outreach team and wanted the HIV testing. And there are very few sites that we have ever been to now in Jamaica where persons do not welcome us. Certainly the sex workers, the staff, most people want the opportunity to test. So that it really is readily asked. I now have individuals. I had a sex worker who visited me at my clinical practice, and she was complaining that at the club where she was working, in a rural area, the outreach staff were not coming frequently enough, and could I get them there to do the testing? So there's widespread acceptance of HIV syphilis testing, and where we have the resources to do the GenProbe testing for other sexually transmitted infections, people welcome it. And we've done this in the inner city with young people, and they also welcome it.
Thank you, Peter. Okay, our next question is, do you offer some kind of incentive to respondents in the process?
Okay, I can answer that one. It depends. Historically, we never gave incentive to respondents, and I think where it's not necessary, it's probably better. And in some cases, people see getting the HIV test as an incentive to participate. In some cases, though, especially as some of these communities are getting hit with survey after survey, and the standard's been set for paying people to participate in surveys, then we have had to give some type of incentive. We've always tried to keep it very small, though, and done it not as cash, but as sort of an in-kind incentive. For example, in Jamaica, I know we used phone cards so that people, you know, presumably can use the phone card to call in and get their STD test results. But we've tried to keep the incentive low or zero.
Great, thank you. Now it looks like we have our last question here. Or no, we just got another, our second to last. The question is, this method can accurately replace specific methods like RDS for MSM.
You know, often a country has the countries have surveillance strategies. And in general, a key point in surveillance is to use the same method, because once you start changing methods, your prevalence estimates and your other indicators are likely to change because you've changed the method. So the discussion about what's the best method for surveillance in a country really is a big question that has a lot of factors that come into play for it. The sampling and doing surveillance among men who have sex with men poses a lot of challenges, and they're often country-specific. So I would say that in some cases, you could use a place approach for MSM surveillance, but that's a big question, and it's kind of difficult to fully answer here. The advantage of RDS for sampling men who have sex with men is because it is peer recruitment. If you have a setting where MSM are quite hidden, perhaps peer recruitment can identify a larger sample of MSM than a place approach. And maybe Peter can also comment on some of the difficulties and strategies for recruiting MSM in Jamaica.
Thank you, Peter.
Okay, well, I agree with what you were saying, Sharon. And we have found with the MSM in Jamaica, when we did the survey in 2007, we met quite a lot of resistance among some of the gatekeepers. And it was only by very, very patient work, and we had an excellent research nurse, and she built relationships with the community, and we had other entry points into the community. And because it's so sensitive, it means that if the different gatekeepers don't have full confidence in the persons that are doing the work and, you know, what is behind it, then there will be some resistance. And it was interesting to note that when we repeated the survey among MSM in 2011, we got twice the number of MSM participants in probably far less than half the time resistance had gone because we had built sufficient relationships with a variety of the gatekeepers and with many of the MSM themselves. So in our experience, it's really difficult to use even with a peer-driven method, it's very difficult to control exactly who is going to be selected. And I think our reality is that, you know, you take who is willing to come and you take as many of them as possible that you can reach. Where we've had a tremendous challenge is we've been able to reach the most vulnerable MSM readily, and that is why our HIV prevalence reported among MSM in Jamaica is so high. We've had much more difficulty getting into the middle class and upper middle class MSM strata to do a serious survey among them. But I'm sure that HIV prevalence would be much less, significantly less, if we were able to penetrate deeper into the MSM community.
Thank you, Peter. Next question. How often can we conduct a place study for the same population? And does it depend sometimes on the priorities of stakeholders?
You don't want to wear people out with these surveys, so I would say every few years is reasonable, because one of the key points of PLACE is to assess coverage and then develop your action plans to address the gaps in coverage. So by the time you get the data, interpret the data, develop an action plan, get that plan funded, and actually are in the field long enough to see expected change, you want that process to to complete before you undertake a follow-up survey to document the change. So I think it would be a couple years between surveys.
Thank you, Sharon. We have two more questions, so we're going to take those two and then wrap up since we're approaching the hour. The second to last is, how valid is the data gotten from these respondents, since you might just be meeting them for the first time and obtaining confidential information from them? I think we addressed some of this earlier, but maybe, Sharon, you can summarize what was said before.
Thank you, Sharon.
You know, we never know how valid the data is, but we have a few. There are a few indications that we are getting some valid data. One is there is an association between the behavior reported and the STIs that we found, suggesting that some of the information is valid. And in one case, we ended up doing back-to-back place surveys in the same cities, and we found exactly the same data both times, suggesting that the method is at least reliable.
Great. Now, our last question is, how useful is the sharing of results with the MSM in building this relationship that Peter is talking about?
So maybe Peter should answer this question.
Well, in our experience, it's extremely important that we share the results. And in fact, just last week, one of the key gatekeepers among the MSM phoned me and asked me just to share some of the latest data, which I did with him. Among the MSM that we have been dealing with in Jamaica, among the most vulnerable MSM a significant risk taking, and I'm not sure that we're really getting through adequately the message to them how much they are at risk. So certainly sharing results is absolutely important.
Thanks, Peter. And I know I said that was the last question, but I just can't help myself. We have to answer the one that just came in. So quickly, Sharon, if you could talk about the question is, you have highlighted the advantages of the PLACE methods. Does it have any disadvantages compared to conventional methods? What are they?
So we're going to end on the disadvantages of PLACE. That's fantastic. Okay. So as an epidemiologist, I love to know about bias and to critique methods. I think one of the weaknesses of PLACE is actually what Peter alluded to in terms of in some of the cases, the time it takes. But also, you know, you have these five steps. So you have a situation where you collect data, you analyze the data, and then use it to move on to the next step. And that whole sequencing process can be difficult for people to own. Other methods that are more one-step methods where you sample a group of respondents, that can be easier. So the five-step part, I think, can be burdensome for people. Of course, this is a venue-based method, so people who don't go to venues aren't going to be captured. Now, my bias is I sort of think that people who have a high rate of new sexual partnerships, even if they catch a lot of partners off the internet or by phone or non-venue-based methods, those people often do go to venues. So I think that you miss the ones who never go to venues, but maybe some of the riskiest people you will find at these venues. And in terms of the actual work, you know, this requires going to venues and places late at night on weekends. It's difficult to find interviewers that are willing to shoulder this data collection burden. So there is a sort of cost in terms of person time for this. And those, I think, are the chief weaknesses.
Thank you, Sharon. And I see we have one additional question that came in. If you leave us your email, we can answer you offline with that last question. So great discussion. Thanks to everybody for their questions. I hope you found that informative. As Sharon mentioned, we have resources available to you. You can see them in the resource box. Down the bottom, if you want to know more, you can also email Sharon or Peter with additional questions. I'll get to their email contacts in a minute. You'll see this slide here about joining Data Use Net. This is a listserv that I moderate where we discuss some issues that are relevant to the use of information and how to improve that and facilitate that. So please consider joining up if you'd like to be part of that listserv to hear about other approaches and methodologies that are kind of engender data use. Here is our presenter contact information if you have additional questions. We really appreciate the time you spent today hearing about the PLACE method, and I would also like to thank our presenters, Dr. Sharon Weir and